Chapter 5. Something Strange. The drumbeat of rain on the tent roof that had lasted through most of the night faded to something softer as Fael approached Savannah's chair, a heavily carved and gilded throne placed in the center of the bright layered carpets that made up the tent's floor, with her eyes carefully lowered to avoid offense. Spring had arrived in a rush, but the braziers were unlit, and the morning air held a touch of chill. Curtsying deeply, she presented the rope-work silver tray. The Aiel woman took the golden goblet of wine and drank without so much as a glance in her direction, but she gave another deep curtsy before backing away and setting the tray down on the brass-bound blue chest that already held a tall-necked silver wine pitcher and three more goblets, then returned to her place with the other 11 Gai Shine present, standing between the mirrored stand lamps along the red silk tent wall. It was a spacious tent, and tall. No low Aiel tent for Savannah. Often it was hard to see her as Aiel at all. This morning she lounged in a red brocaded silk robe, tied so it gaped nearly to her waist and exposed half her considerable bosom, though she wore enough jeweled necklaces, emeralds and firedrops and opals, ropes of fat pearls, that she came near to being decent. The Aiel did not wear rings, yet Savannah had at least one begemmed ring on every finger. The thick band of gold and firedrops worn over the folded blue silk scarf that held back her waist-long yellow hair had taken on the aspect of a coronet, if not a crown. There was nothing Aiel in that. Fael and the others, 6 women and 5 men, had been wakened in the night to stand beside Savannah's bed, a pair of feather mattresses laid one atop the other, in case the woman woke and wanted something. Was any ruler in the world attended by a dozen servants while she slept? She fought the urge to yawn. Many things might earn punishment, but yawning surely would. Gai Shine were supposed to be meek and eager to please, and it seemed that that meant obsequious to the point of groveling. Bane and Chiad, fierce as they were otherwise, seemed to find it easy. Fael did not. In the near month since she was stripped and tied up like a blacksmith's puzzle for hiding a knife, she had been switched 9 times for trivial offenses that were serious in Savannah's eyes. Her last set of welts had not faded completely yet, and she had no intention of earning another set through carelessness. She hoped that Savannah thought her tamed by that night trussed up in the cold. Only Roland and his braziers had saved her life. She hoped that she was not being tamed. Pretend something too long and it could become truth. She had been a prisoner less than 2 months, yet she could no longer recall exactly how many days ago she was captured. At times it seemed she had been in white robes for a year or more. Sometimes the wide belt and collar of flat golden links felt natural. That frightened her. She clung hard to hope. She would escape soon. She had to, before Perrin caught up and tried to rescue her. Why had he not caught up yet? The Shido had been camped at Malden for a long time now. He would not have abandoned her. Her wolf would be coming to rescue her. She had to escape before he got himself killed in the attempt, before she was no longer pretending.
"How long are you going to keep punishing Galena Sedai, Thurava?" Savannah demanded, frowning at the Aes Sedai.
Thurava was seated cross-legged in front of her on a tasseled blue cushion, straight-backed and stern.
"Last night she made my bath water too hot, and she is so welted I had to order the soles of her feet beaten. That is not very effective when she must be left able to walk."
Fael had been avoiding looking at Galena ever since Thurava brought her into the tent, but her eyes went to the woman of their own accord at mention of her name. Galena was kneeling erect, halfway between the 2 Aiel women and slightly to one side, mottled brown bruises on her cheeks, her skin damp and slick from the heavy rain she had been walked through to get there, her feet and ankles muddy. She wore only her firedrop-studded golden collar and belt, and seemed more naked than naked. Just a stubble remained of her hair and eyebrows. Every hair from head to toe had been singed from her with the one power. Fael had heard it described, along with how the Aes Sedai had been hung from her ankles for her first beating. That had been half the talk among the Gai Shine for days. Only the handful who recognized her ageless face for what it was could believe that she was Aes Sedai,
and some of those had the same doubts that had plagued Fail on finding an Aes Sedai among the Gai Shine. After all, she had the face and the ring, but why would an Aes Sedai let Tharava treat her so? Fail asked herself that question often without arriving at any answer. She kept telling herself that Aes Sedai often did what they did for reasons no one else could understand, but that was not very satisfying. Whatever her reasons for tolerating such abuse, Galena's eyes were wide and frightened now and fixed on Tharava. She was panting so hard that her breasts heaved. She had reason for fear. Anyone passing Tharava's tent was likely to hear Galena howling for mercy inside. For more than half a week, Fail had gotten glimpses of the Aes Sedai on some errand, hairless and garbed as she was now, and running as hard as she could with panic painting her face. And every day Tharava added to the bands of welts that striped Galena from her shoulders to the backs of her knees. Whenever one band began to heal, Tharava refreshed it. Fail had heard Shido mutter that Galena was being treated too harshly, but no one was about to interfere with a wise one. Tharava, nearly as tall as most Aiel men, adjusted her dark shawl in a rattle of gold and ivory bracelets and regarded Galena like a blue-eyed eagle regarding a mouse. Her necklaces, also gold and ivory, seemed plain compared to Savannah's opulence, her dark woolen skirts and white Algoda blouse drab. Yet of the two women, Fail feared Tharava far more than she did Savannah. Savannah might have her punished for a stumble, but Tharava could kill her or crush her for a whim. She surely would for failure.
"So long as the faintest bruise remains on her face, the rest of her will be bruised as well. I have left the front of her unmarked so she can be punished for other misdeeds."
Galena began trembling. Silent tears leaked down her cheeks. Fail averted her gaze. It was painful to watch. Even if she managed to get the rod from Tharava's tent, could the Aes Sedai any longer be of help in escape? She gave every sign of being completely broken. That was a harsh thought, but a prisoner needed to be practical above all else. Would Galena betray her to try buying her way out of the beatings? She had threatened to betray her if Fail failed to obtain the rod. It was Savannah who would be interested in Perrin Abara's wife, yet Galena looked desperate enough to try anything. Fail prayed for the woman to find strength to hold out. She was still planning an escape on her own, in case the Aes Sedai could not keep her promise to take them with her when she left. But it would be so much easier, so much safer for everyone if she could do it. Oh, Light, why had Perrin not caught up yet? No, she had to keep her focus.
"She is not very impressive like that," Savannah muttered, frowning into her goblet now. "Even that ring cannot make her look like an Aes Sedai."
She shook her head irritably. For some reason Fail did not understand, it was very important to Savannah that everyone know that Galena was a sister. She had even taken to giving her the honorific.
"Why are you here so early, Tharava? I have not even eaten yet. Will you take some wine?"
"Water," Tharava said firmly. "As for it being early, the sun is almost over the horizon. I broke fast before it rose. You grow as indolent as a wetlander, Savannah."
Lusara, a buxom Domani Gai Shine, quickly filled a goblet from the silver water pitcher. Savannah seemed amused by the wise one's insistence on drinking only water, yet she provided it for them. Anything else would have been an insult, even she would want to avoid. The copper-skinned Domani had been a merchant, and well into her middle years, but a few white hairs among the black falling below her shoulders had not been enough to save her. She was stunningly beautiful, and Savannah gathered the rich, the powerful, and the beautiful, simply taking them if they were Gai Shine to someone else. There were so many Gai Shine that few complained at having one taken. Lusara curtsied gracefully and bowed to present her tray to Tharava on her cushion, all very proper, but on the way back to her place against the wall, she smiled at Fail. Worse. It was a conspiratorial smile. Fail suppressed a sigh. Her last switching had been for a sigh at the wrong moment. Lusara was one of those who had sworn fealty to her in the past 2 weeks. After Aravine, Fail had tried to choose carefully, but rejecting someone who asked to swear was creating a possible betrayer, so she had far too many adherents, a good number of whom she was unsure of. She was beginning to believe that Lusara was trustworthy, or at least that she would not intentionally betray her. But the woman treated their escape plans like a child's game, without cost if they lost. It seemed she had treated merchanting in the same way, making and losing several fortunes. But Fail would have no chance to start over if they lost. Nor would Aleandra, or Megden, or Lusara. Among Savannah's Guy Shine, those who actually attempted escape were kept chained when not serving her or performing tasks. Thurava took a swallow of water, then set the goblet down on the flowered carpet beside her and fixed Savannah with a steely gaze. "The wise ones believe it is past time for us to move north and east. We can find easily defended valleys in the mountains there, and we can reach them in less than 2 weeks, even slowed as we are by the Guy Shine. This place is open on every side, and our raids to find food must go further and further." Savannah's green eyes met that stare without blinking, which Fail doubted she herself could have done. It nettled Savannah when the other wise ones met without her, and frequently she took it out on her Guy Shine, but she smiled and took a sip of wine before replying in patient tones, as though explaining to someone not quite bright enough to understand. "Here, there is good soil for planting, and we have their seed to add to our own. Who knows what the soil is like in the mountains? Our raids bring in cattle and sheep and goats, too. Here there are good pastures. What pasturage do you know of in these mountains, Thurava? Here we have more water than any clan has ever had. Do you know where the water is in the mountains? As to defending ourselves, who will come against us? These wetlanders run from our spears." "Not all run," Thurava said dryly. "Some are even good at dancing the spears. And what if Randall Thor sends one of the other clans against us? We would never know until the horns closed in on us." Suddenly she smiled too, a smile that never reached her eyes. "Some say your plan is to be captured and made Guy Shine to Randall Thor so you can induce him to marry you. An amusing idea. You agree?" Despite herself, Fail flinched. Savannah's mad intention to marry Althor, she had to be mad to think she could, was what put Fail in danger from Galena. If the Aiel woman did not know that Perrin was linked to Althor, Galena could tell her. Would tell her if she could not get her hands on that cursed rod. Savannah would take no chances on losing her then. She would be chained as certainly as if caught trying to escape. Savannah looked anything except amused. Eyes glittering, she leaned forward, her robe gaping to expose her bosom completely. "Who says this? Who?" Thurava picked up her goblet and took another swallow of water. Realizing she would get no answer, Savannah leaned back and rearranged her robe. Her eyes still glittered like polished emeralds, though, and there was nothing casual in her words. They came out as hard as her eyes. "I will marry Randall Thor, Thurava. I almost had him, until you and the other wise ones failed me. I will marry him, unite the clans, and conquer all of the wetlands." Thurava sneered over her goblet. "Kuladin was the Karakarn, Savannah. I have not found the wise ones who gave him permission to go to Ruidion, but I will. Randall Thor is a creature of the Aes Sedai. They told him what to say at Al-Kher Dal, and a black day it was when he revealed secrets few are strong enough to know. Be grateful that most believe he lied, but I forget. You have never gone to Ruidion. You believed his lies yourself." Guy Shine began entering past the tent flap, their white robes rain damp, holding their hems knee high until they were inside. Each wore the golden collar and belt. Their soft white laced boots left muddy marks on the carpets. Later, when those had dried, they would have to clean them away, but getting visible mud on your robes was a sure path to the switch. Savannah wanted her Guy Shine spotless when they were around her. Neither Aiel woman paid the slightest attention to the arrivals. Savannah seemed taken aback by what Thurava had said. "Why do you care who gave Kuladin permission? No matter," she said, waving a hand as though brushing away a fly when she got no reply. "Kuladin is dead. Randall Thor has the markings, however he got them. I will marry him, and I will make use of him.
If the Aes Sedai could control him and I saw them handling him like a babe, then I can. With a little help from you. And you will help. You agree that uniting the clans is worth doing no matter how it is done? You did once. Somehow there was more than a hint of threat in that. We Shido will become the most powerful of the clans in one leap. Lowering their cowls, the new Gaishine filed wordlessly along the tent walls, 9 men and 3 women, one of them Megdin. The sun-haired woman wore a grim expression that had been on her face since the day Tharava had discovered her in the Wise One's tent. Whatever Tharava had done, all Megdin would say of it was that she wanted to kill the other woman. Sometimes she whimpered in her sleep, though. Tharava kept whatever she thought about uniting the clans to herself. There is much feeling against staying here. Many of the Sept chiefs press the red disk on their Narbaha every morning. I advise you to heed the wise ones. Narbaha? That would mean Box of Fools, or something very near. But what could this be? Bane and Chiad were still teaching her about Aiel ways when they could find time, and they had never mentioned any such thing. Megdin stopped beside Lusara. A slender Kyrianan nobleman named Dormanes stopped beside Fael. He was young and very pretty, but he bit his lip nervously. If he learned about the oaths of fealty, he would have to be killed. She was certain he would run to Savannah in a heartbeat. "We remain here," Savannah said angrily, flinging her goblet to the carpets in a spray of wine. "I speak for the clan chief, and I have spoken."
"You have spoken," Tharava agreed calmly. "Benduin, Sept Chief of the Green Salts, has received permission to go to Ruidion. He left 5 days ago with 20 of his Algae de Siswai and 4 wise ones to stand witness."
Not until one of the new Gaishines stood beside each of those already there did Fael and the others raise their cowls and begin filing along the walls toward the door flap, already gathering their robes to the knee. She had become quite sanguine about exposing her legs so.
"He seeks to replace me? And I was not even informed?"
"Not you, Savannah. Kuladin. As his widow, you speak for the clan chief until a new chief returns from Ruidion, but you are not the clan chief."
Fael stepped out into the cold, gray morning drizzle, and the tent flap cut off whatever Savannah said to that. What was going on between the two women? Sometimes, as this morning, they seemed antagonists, but at others they seemed reluctant conspirators bound together by something that gave neither any comfort. Or perhaps it was the being bound together itself that made them uncomfortable. Well, she could not see how knowing would help her escape, so it did not really matter. But the puzzle nagged at her. 6 maidens stood clustered in front of the tent, veils hanging down onto their chests, spears thrust up through the harness of the bow cases on their backs. Bane and Chiad were contemptuous of Savannah for using maidens of the spear for her guard of honor, though she herself had never been a maiden, and for having her tent always guarded. But there were never fewer than 6, night or day. Those two were contemptuous of the Shido maidens for allowing it, too. Neither being a clan chief nor speaking for one gave you as much power as most nobles possessed. These maidens' hands were flashing in a rapid conversation. She caught the sign for Karakarn several times, but not sufficient else to make out what they were saying, or whether about Al-Thor or Kuladin. Standing there long enough to find out, if she could find out, was beyond the question. With the others already hurrying away down the muddy street, the maidens would become suspicious for one thing, and then they might switch her themselves, or worse, use her own bootlaces. She had had a hard dose of that from some maidens for having insolent eyes, and she did not want another, especially when it meant bearing herself in public. Being Savannah's Gaishine gave no protection. Any Shido could discipline any Gaishine they thought was behaving improperly. Even a child could, if the child was set to watch you carry out a chore. For another thing, the cold rain, light as it was going to soak through her woolen robes soon enough. She had only a short walk back to her tent, no more than 1/4 mile, but she would not complete it without being stopped for a time.
A yawn cracked her jaw as she turned from the large red tent. She very much wanted her blankets and a few more hours' sleep. There would be more chores come afternoon. What they might be, she did not know. Matters would be much simpler if Savannah settled on who she wanted to do what when, but she seemed to choose names at random and always at the last minute. It made planning anything, much less the escape, very difficult. All sorts of tents surrounded Savannah's. Low, dark Aiel tents, peaked tents, walled tents, tents of every sort and size in every color imaginable, separated by a tangle of dirt streets that were now rivers of mud. Lacking enough of their own, the Shido snatched up every tent they could find. 14 septs were camped in a sprawl around Malden now, 100,000 Shido and as many Gai Shine, and rumor said 2 more septs, the Morai and the White Cliff, would arrive within days. Aside from small children splashing through the mud with romping dogs, most of the people she could see as she walked wore mud-stained white and were carrying baskets or bulging sacks. Most of the women did not hurry. They ran. Except for the blacksmiths, the Shido seldom did any work themselves, and generally only out of boredom, she suspected. With so many Gai Shine, finding chores for them all was itself a chore. Savannah was no longer the only Shido to actually sit in a bathtub with a Gai Shine scrubbing her back. None of the wise ones had gone that far yet, but some of the others would not stir themselves 2 paces to pick something up when they could tell a Gai Shine to fetch it. She was almost to the Gai Shine portion of the camp, hard against the gray stone walls of Malden, when she saw a wise one striding toward her with her dark shawl wrapped around her head against the rain. Fael did not stop, but she bent her knees a little. Mera was not so frightening as Tharava, but the grim-faced woman was hard enough and shorter than Fael. Her narrow mouth always grew even tighter when she was confronted with a woman taller than she. Fael would have thought that learning her own sept, the White Cliff, would be there soon would brighten the woman's mood, but the news had had no discernible effect at all.
"So you were just lagging," Mera said as she came close. Her eyes were as hard as the sapphires they resembled. "I left Riala listening to the others because I feared some drunken fool had pulled you into a tent."
She glared around her as though looking for a drunken fool about to do just that. "No one accosted me, wise one," Fael said quickly. Several had in the last few weeks, some drunk and some not, but Rolan always appeared in the nick of time. Twice the big Meridin had had to fight to save her, and once he had killed the other man. She had expected 9 kinds of uproar and trouble, but the wise ones judged it a fair fight, and Rolan said her name had never been mentioned. For all that Bane and Chiad insisted it went against all custom, assault was a constant danger for Gai Shine women here. She was sure that Aleandra had been assaulted once, before she and Megden also acquired Meridin shadows. Rolan denied having asked them to help her people. He said they were just bored and looking for something to do. "I'm very sorry I was slow."
"Do not cringe. I'm not Tharava. I will not beat you for the pleasure of it."
Words set in tones hard enough for a headsman. Mera might not beat people for pleasure, but Fael knew for a fact that she had a strong arm swinging a switch.
"Now tell me what Savannah said and did. This water falling from the sky may be a wondrous thing, but it is miserable to walk around in."
Obeying the command was easy. Savannah had not wakened during the night, and once she did rise, all her talk had been of what clothes and jewels she would wear, especially the jewels. Her jewelry chest had been made to hold clothing, and it was filled to the top with more gems than most queens possessed. Before putting on any garment at all, Savannah had spent time trying on different combinations of necklaces and rings and studying herself in the gilt-framed stand mirror. It had been very embarrassing for Fael. She had just reached Tharava's arrival with Galena when everything in front of her eyes rippled. She rippled. It was not imagination. Mera's blue eyes widened as far as they could go. She had felt it too. Again everything rippled, including herself, harder than before. In shock, Fael stood up straight and let go of her robe.
A third time the world rippled harder still, and as it passed through her she felt as if she might blow away in a breeze, or simply dissipate in a mist. Breathing hard, she waited for the fourth ripple, the one she knew would destroy her and everything else. When it did not come, she expelled every bit of air in her lungs from relief.
"What just happened, Wise One? What was that?"
Mara touched her own arm and looked faintly surprised that her hand did not pass through flesh and bone.
"I do not know," she said slowly.
Giving herself a shake, she added, "Go on about your business, girl." She gathered her skirts and strode past Fail at little short of a trot, splashing mud as she went. The children had vanished from the street, but Fail could hear them wailing inside the tents. Abandoned dogs shivered and whined, tails tucked between their legs. People in the street were touching themselves, touching each other, Shido and Guy Shine alike. Fail clasped her hands together. Of course she was solid. She had only felt as though she were turning to mist. Of course. Hoisting her robes to avoid any more washing than she absolutely had to do, she began to walk, and then to run, careless of how much mud she splashed onto herself or anyone else. She knew there could be no running from another of those ripples, but she ran anyway, as fast as her legs could carry her. The Gaishine tents made a broad ring around Malden's high granite walls, and they were as varied as the tents in the outer part of the encampment, though most were small. Her own peaked tent could have slept, too, uncomfortably. It housed herself and three others, Aleandra, Megdin, and a former Kyrian noblewoman named Dyraine, one of those who curried favor with Savannah by carrying tales about the other Gaishine. That complicated matters, but there was no mending it short of killing the woman, and Fail would not countenance that. Not unless Dyraine became a real threat. They slept huddled together like puppies of necessity, glad of the shared body warmth on cold nights. The interior of the low tent was dim when she ducked inside. Lamp oil and candles were in short supply and not wasted on Gaishine. Only Aleandra was there, lying face down on her blankets in her collar with a damp cloth dipped in an herbal infusion over her bruised bottom. At least the Wise Ones were as willing to give their healing herbs to Gaishine as to Shido. Aleandra had done nothing wrong, but had been named as one of the five who had pleased Savannah least yesterday. Unlike some, she had done quite well while being punished. Dormanus had begun weeping even before he was bent over the chest, but she seemed to be among those chosen out every 3 or 4 days. Being a queen did not teach you how to serve a queen. But then Megdin was picked nearly as often, and she was a lady's maid, if not a very skilled one. Fail herself had only been chosen once. It was a measure of how Aleandra's spirits had fallen that she made no move to cover herself, only raised up on her elbows. Still, she had combed her long hair. If she failed to do that, Fail would know the woman had reached bottom.
"Did anything strange happen to you just now, my lady?" she asked, fear strong in her unsteady voice. "It did," Fail said, standing crouched under the ridgepole. "I don't know what it was. Mara doesn't know what it was. I doubt any of the Wise Ones do. But it didn't harm us." "Of course it had not harmed them. Of course not. And it changes nothing in our plans." Yawning, she unfastened the wide golden belt and dropped it on her blankets, then grasped her outer robe to pull it over her head. Aleandra put her head down on her hands and began weeping quietly.
"We'll never escape. I'm going to be beaten again tonight. I know it. I'm going to be beaten every day for the rest of my life."
With a sigh, Fail left her outer robe where it was and knelt to stroke her liegewoman's hair. There were as many responsibilities down as up.
"I have those same fears now and then," she admitted softly. "But I refuse to let them take control. I will escape. We will escape. You have to keep your courage, Aleandra. I know you're brave. I know you've dealt with Massima and kept your nerve. You can keep it now if you try." Aravine put her head in at the tent flap. She was a plain, plump woman, a noble, Fael was sure, though she never claimed it, and despite the dimness, Fael could see that she was beaming. She wore Savannah's belt and collar, too.
My lady, Alvon and his son have something for you. It will have to wait a few minutes, Fael said.
Alejandra had stopped crying, but she was just lying there, silent and still.
My lady, you won't want to wait for this.
Fael's breath caught. Could it be possible? It seemed too much to hope for.
I can keep my nerve, Alejandra said,
raising her head to gaze at Aravine.
If what Alvon has is what I hope it is, I'll keep my nerve if Savannah has me put to the question.
Snatching up her belt, being seen outside without belt and collar both, meant punishment almost as severe as for trying to run away, Fael hurried out of the tent. The drizzle had slackened to a misting rain, but she pulled up her cowl anyway. The rain was still cold. Alvon was a stocky man, overtopped by his son Theril, a lanky boy. Both wore mud-stained, almost white robes made of tent cloth. Theril, Alvon's eldest, was only 14, but the Shido had not believed it because of his height, as much as most men in Amadicia. Fael had been ready to trust Alvon from the start. He and his son were something of legends among the Gaishine. 3 times they had run away, and each time it had taken the Shido longer to bring them back. And despite increasingly fierce punishment, on the day they swore fealty they had been planning a 4th attempt to return to the rest of their family. Neither ever smiled that Fael had seen, but today smiles wreathed Alvon's weathered face and Theril's skinny one alike.
"What do you have for me?" Fael asked, hastily fastening her belt around her waist.
She thought her heart was going to pound its way out of her chest.
"It was my Theril, my lady," Alvon said.
A woodcutter, he spoke with a coarse accent that made him barely intelligible.
"He was just walking by, see, and there was nobody around, nobody at all, so he ducked in quick-like and show the lady, Theril."
Shyly, Theril reached into his wide sleeve. The robes usually had pockets sewn in there, and drew out a smooth white rod that looked like ivory, about 1 foot long and as slim as her wrist. Looking around to see if anyone was watching, the street was empty save for them, for the moment at least. Fael took it quickly and pushed it up her own sleeve to tuck into the pocket there. The pocket was just deep enough to keep it from falling out, but now that she had the thing in hand she did not want to let go of it. It felt like glass, and was distinctly cool to the touch, cooler than the morning air. Perhaps it was an Angrial, or a Turangrial. That would explain why Galena wanted it, if not why she had not taken it herself. Hand buried in her sleeve, Fael gripped the rod hard. Galena was no longer a threat. Now she was salvation.
"You understand, Alvon, that Galena may be unable to take you and your son with her when she leaves," she said. "She has only promised that to me and those captured with me. But I promise you that I will find a way to free you and everyone who has sworn to me. All the rest, too, if I can, but those above all. Under the light and by my hope of salvation and rebirth, I swear it."
How, she had no idea, short of calling on her father for an army. But she would do it. The woodcutter made as if to spit, then glanced at her, and his face colored. He swallowed instead.
"That Galena ain't going to help nobody, m'lady. Says she's Aes Sedai and all, but she's that Thorava's plaything, if you ask me. And that Thorava ain't never going to let her go. Anyways, I know if we can get you free, you'll come back for the rest of us. No need for you to swear and all that. You said you wanted the rod if anybody could lay hands on it without getting caught, and Theril got it for you, that's all."
"I want to be free," Theril said suddenly. "But if we get anybody free, then we've beaten them."
He looked surprised that he had spoken, and blushed deep red. His father frowned at him, then nodded thoughtfully.
"Very well said," Fael told the boy gently. "But I made my oath, and I stand by it. You and your father..."
She cut off as Aravine, looking past her shoulder, laid a hand on her arm. The woman's smile had been replaced by fright.
Turning her head, Fail saw Roland standing beside her tent. A good 2 hands taller than Perrin, he wore his shufa coiled around his neck, with the black veil hanging down his broad chest. Rain slicked his face and made his short red hair cling to his scalp in curls. How long had he been there? Not long, or Aravine would have noticed him before. The tiny tent offered little concealment. Alvan and his son had their shoulders hunched, as if they were thinking about attacking the tall Meridin. That was a very bad idea. Mice attacking a cat was not in it, as Perrin would have said. "Go on about your duties, Alvan," she said quickly. "You too, Aravine. Go on now." Aravine and Alvan had sense enough not to offer courtesies before leaving with final worried glances at Roland, but Theral half raised a hand toward knuckling his forehead before catching himself. Blushing, he scurried away after his father. Roland came out from beside the tent to stand in front of her. Oddly, he had a small bunch of blue and yellow wildflowers in one hand. She was very conscious of the rod she was holding in her sleeve. Where was she to hide it? Once the Rava discovered it missing, she likely would turn the camp upside down.
"You must be careful, Fail Bashir," Roland said, smiling down at her.
Aleandra called him not quite pretty, but Fail had decided she was wrong. Those blue eyes and that smile made him very nearly beautiful.
"What you are about is dangerous, and I may not be here to protect you much longer."
"Dangerous?" She felt a chill in her middle. "What do you mean? Where are you going?" The thought of losing his protection made her stomach lurch. Few of the Wetlander women had escaped the attentions of Shido men. Without him...
"Some of us are thinking of returning to the Threefold Land."
His smile faded.
"We cannot follow a false Karakarn, and a Wetlander at that. But perhaps we will be allowed to live out our lives in our own holds. We think on it. We have been a long time from home, and these Shido sicken us."
She would find a way to deal with it once he was gone. She would have to. Somehow. "And what am I doing that is dangerous?" She tried to make her voice light, but it was difficult. Light. What would happen to her without him?
"These Shido are blind even when they are not drunk, Fail Bashir," he replied calmly.
Pushing her cowl back, he tucked one of the wildflowers into her hair above her left ear.
"We, Meridin, use our eyes."
Another wildflower went into her hair on the other side.
"You have made many new friends lately, and you are planning to escape with them. A bold plan, but dangerous."
"And will you tell the wise ones, or Savannah?" She was startled when that came out in an even tone. Her stomach was trying to tie itself into knots.
"Why would I do that?" he asked,
adding another flower to her decorations.
"Jurrodin thinks he will take Lasiel Aldorwin back to the Threefold Land with him, even if she is a tree killer. He believes he may convince her to make a bridal wreath to lay at his feet."
Lasiel had found her own protector by climbing into the blankets of the Meridin who had made her Guy Shine, and Arala had done the same with one of the maidens who had captured her, but Fail doubted that Jurrodin would attain his wish. Both women were focused on escape like arrows aimed at a target.
"And now that I think on it, I may take you with me if we go."
Fail stared up at him. The rain was beginning to soak through her hair. "To the waist? Roland, I love my husband. I've told you that, and it is true."
"I know," he said, continuing to add flowers. "But for the moment you still wear white, and what happens while you wear white is forgotten when you put it off. Your husband cannot hold it against you. Besides, if we go, when we come near a Wetlander town, I will let you go. I should never have made you Guy Shine in the first place. That collar and belt hold enough gold to get you safely back to your husband."
Her mouth fell open in shock. It surprised her when her fist struck his wide chest. Guy Shine were never allowed to offer violence, but the man just grinned at her.
"You!"
She struck him again, harder. She beat at him.
"You! I can't think of a word bad enough. You let me think you were going to abandon me to these Shido while all along you were meaning to help me escape?
Finally, he caught her fist and held it easily with a hand that enveloped hers completely.
If we go, Fail Bashir, he laughed.
The man laughed!
It is not decided. Anyway, a man cannot let a woman think he is too eager.
Again she surprised herself, this time by beginning to laugh and cry at the same time, so hard that she had to lean against him or fall down.
That bloody Aiel sense of humor!
You are very beautiful with flowers in your hair, Fail Bashir, he murmured, tucking in another blossom. Or without them. And for the moment, you still wear white.
Light.
She had the rod, leaning against her arm so coolly, but there was no way to give it to Galina until Tharava let her walk around freely again. No way to be sure that the woman would not betray her before then out of desperation. Roland offered her escape, if the Meriden decided to leave, but he would continue to try to inveigle her into his blanket so long as she wore white. And if the Meriden decided not to go, would one of them betray her escape plans? If Roland could be believed, they all knew. Hope and danger all tied together inextricably. What a tangle. She turned out to have been exactly right about Tharava's reaction. Just before midday, all of the Gaishine were herded into the open and made to strip to their skins. Covering herself as best she could with her hands, Fail huddled together with other women wearing Savannah's belt and collar. They had been made to put those on again straight away, huddled for a scrap of decency while Shido rummaged through the Gaishine tents, tossing everything out into the mud. All Fail could do was think about her hiding place inside the town and pray. Hope and danger, and no way to untangle them.